previously on Geth in the Mecha.
So in today's episode, we'll be taking a stroll through all the way from 2010 to 2018, looking at what has passed us, my impressions of all of those, and possibly what the future holds for anime. Anime is only going to come back stronger next year, and in 2020 and beyond in the decade, this decade has been successful. This is Geth in the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it. Welcome back to Geth in the Mecha, I'm your host Jamal today as usual, and in today's episode we are discussing lessons that I've learned from this year, or 2019 in anime, or just so far, what I have learned from anime, and how I've sort of approached it as of recent. 2019, as well as this decade, as I spoke about in last episode, the decade review, has been a very interesting one, and it's changed a lot over time. And with that, I've developed new viewing habits, I've learned some practical lessons, and a few other things which I want to discuss in today's episode. So we'll be doing a bit more reflection before we return back to arc analyses and all those things. If you get value from today's episode, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. But regardless of that, here's the episode for this week. That is episode 23 of Geth in the Mecha. What a year it's been for anime, and what a long time it's been for anime. Anime has been around for ages. If we go back to what I was talking about back in episode 21, when I was speaking about Osamu Tezuka, the founding fathers of anime, and now we're here with all these new narratives and things to get our heads stuck into. But how do we navigate around all of it? How do we filter out the noise and find something that we like? One solution I found to that, and my first sort of lesson, or something I picked up on, is kind of not to do that. Or at least maybe just go slightly against it. One thing that I've learned when it comes to viewing this year is kind of just watch things on a whim. I don't want to seem preachy this episode, I'm not teaching you how to watch anime. I'm just saying what I've done recently that has made me almost enjoy anime a bit more. And that is just watching things on a whim. So if we go to about winter season of this year, 2019, I decided to, this was at a time where I was watching anime with other people online, so we had a bit of a viewing group, although I'm not a part of that anymore. It was a good time though. But what we would do is, sometimes they'll just throw a new anime into the mix to watch, because just as a recommendation, and we would try it out. That one was The Quintessential Quintuplets, and I decided, despite being quite judgmental of this anime, because I think I've carried on this habit of watching things ironically, and I actually have a lot of fun out of it, but I decided to watch this anime thinking that this wasn't going to be very good. I'm just going to stick around for the memes and just to have a good time overall, and I had a good time, but not ironically, because I decided to watch the show on a whim, and I actually enjoyed it overall. I ended up watching about like 7 episodes of the show in about a day or two. I would watch every episode basically as soon as it was released when I could find it. Overall, I just had a sensational time with The Quintessential Quintuplets. And where did that end me? That got me to here when I've watched almost like 5-6 harems this year. I'm the harem fan. I'm a really big harem fan now. So my lesson, I think, that comes out of that is don't be too sort of assumptive as, well, that's one of the lessons. Don't assume too much about what you're getting into, because the thing is, it can get you to a better place than you once realized. So kind of letting the waves take you up and throw you wherever on the beach, bad analogy, but it's sometimes a good thing, because you're not really expecting something. You don't know what's going to come out of your activities and searching for an anime. And then that might get you hooked to a genre. It might take you to another side of another genre because, say, you don't like that show, which is perfectly fine. It may move you over to another side of the genre which you like or the medium which you like. If you don't like short film, you might try out long form and you might be really obsessed with that. If you don't like harem, you might try, I don't know, Basil Shonen, and those aren't particularly parallels. However, you might go for something that slightly contrasts your tastes or fits more in line with your tastes, but something different. So watching on a whim has been something that I've really had fun with this year and has got me to watch some shows that I never thought I would watch this year. And now I will probably carry that habit into 2020. Maybe try out some new seasonal anime that I haven't tried or usually would watch, because that has helped so much and it's made my viewing a lot more diverse. I think I've learned more about the medium by doing so. That kind of links me to my second-ish lesson, and that's on giving things a chance. SSSS Gridman, I think, is the primary example of that. And sure, this is an anime made by a studio in the same year that produced or helped to produce Darling in the Franxx, a very debated anime to whether it was good or just whack. Most people would say the ending was whack, and I agree. In that same vein, obviously you lack trust in that sort of stuff. However, Gridman, as well as taking the risk of 3D mechas and kaiju, or evident 3D mechas and kaiju, that show proved to me that there's a reason why we should complete a show, and that's because you're supposed to buy into this structure. Episodes are composed almost for a reason and are composed for the sake of them being watched. So if I make a 12-episode series, I would like, optimally, my viewer to watch 12 episodes. SSS Gridman rewards one for watching all the episodes, since it changes your entire outlook from the last scene, because the last scene gives you an insight into what has really been going on in this sort of fantasy world, and it contextualizes that. Contextualizing is important, and sometimes you need to wait to be contextualized. I think E.S. Salmon's writing, something we talk about all the time on the podcast, even in last episode, check that out if you want to hear more E.S. Salmon stuff. I talk about E.S. Salmon's content all the time, and this relates almost perfectly to him on contextualizing. He loves to delay contextualizing. Layering and contextualizing are sort of his fortes. Planting a seed about the basement and then waiting quite a while to introduce it later, as it's almost the right timing. Timing is key. And so that's why I think contextualizing is important, and that's why I think give things a chance. Again, I'm not telling you actively to take a chance. However, I've learned personally that giving things a chance can be really rewarding. So Attack on Titan, good example for me personally. I struggled really with second season. Third season paid off a lot of things with the return to Shiganshina arc. Uprising, kind of. But it's about buying into the structure that a writer puts forward, because it's meant to be watched. I'm a hypocrite because I think we're all hypocrites, or at least I'm a hypocrite saying things on a podcast that obviously I'm not completely doing. But I do have quite a few shows on my pending list, or at least my on hold list on my anime list. That's my fault, because that's not me buying into a structure that a writer or a producer or a director's vision is for me to get into. But I should always present sort of the counter argument, and that is, you're not always going to get something that you like out of giving it a chance. If anything, it might muck up, like Franxx. Franxx last year, 2018, Darling in the Franxx. It's very well produced and connected episodes from about episode 1 to 5. Very strong intertextuality to the likes of Evangelion. To an extent where I heard something where people were saying that Franxx is the new Eva. And although I don't believe that as an Eva fan, I could see the influence and the inspiration, I hope it's inspiration, from the series. And then it kind of blows that out of the water. And I don't mean it in the Evangelion way, so let's put these two anime side to side for proving my point on not getting where you started. So we take an actual dementia anime, dementia being sort of this more twisted genre. It's a bit hard to explain, but it tries to sort of twist over time and becomes usually more nasty as we go along, or at least reveals itself to be something different than what we once thought. It effectively tears itself open. We reference that versus something like Franks. Franks tears itself open in the wrong way. It tears itself open by deviating highly from its original cause by introducing these weird concepts and then pitting romance against each other. And there's nothing wrong with being genre hybrid and introducing multiple genres, but if you're going to do that, do it in a way that fits the show. And I think Franks proves that time is of essence. Us as an audience, I think, got tired from waiting and waiting for something more plot related to happen, and then bada bing bada boom, forced drama. It didn't really correlate, so that's kind of my counter argument, that not everything will get you where you want. But if we go back to watching things on a whim kind of will help that, because you're not really expecting it to go wrong. You kind of just plunge right into it, and then even if you don't give it a chance, you might get a reward out of that, being you've realized you don't like this, so you're going to watch something else, and that something else might be something for you. And while we're on the topic of Franks, let's go to the Link the VA segment. We'll do a bit of a Franks, because I've basically spoken about Franks for about two episodes indirectly. I've made loads of Franks references, so I think it's right that we award this anime with a Link the VA segment for this week. The Link the VA segment is very simple, as I say every single episode. What we do is we look at a voice actor who plays a voice in one of the anime of which we're speaking about, find one of the roles from the relevant anime, and then find that voice actor and look at who else they play on their mail page. This week we are looking at Austin Tindall. Plays many roles. I say that again all the time, but I think this time he plays a lot of roles, which I'm quite aware of. So who does he play? In Darling in the Franks, he plays Goro, just to get that straight. However, in anime, he plays quite a few mainstream roles, actually. Three from three anime, which I mentioned in last episode. To be fair, I spoke about quite a lot of anime in last episode. But anyway, so first one is Karma Akabane. So that is Karma from Ansatsu Kiyoshitsu. Probably one of the most daring and savage characters you'll meet in a school context. I like this character, and I do like the dub from this on the most part. Has quite a subtle voice, to the extent where, for someone so savage, you kind of wonder, why is his voice so delightful? But that's kind of the point, because he feels really not uptight, although you'd expect someone like him to be so uptight. I feel like he would get on Goro's nerves, so I think he'll get on anybody's nerves so bad, if I'm quite frank. He doesn't really get on my nerves, but in real life, if I wasn't prepared, he probably would. Also, the voice, as I said, is really subtle. I do like that, but I expected it from, because this is a dub actor, I expected it to be a lot more upfront and, you know, chastising, but that really isn't Karma, so I'm willing to settle for that. The second role is Kaneki. Kaneki Ken, this is kind of a throwback, because we've spoken about all three of the anime which I'm going to talk about today on the podcast already. So this one being Kaneki Ken, or Ken Centipede Dragon Eyepatch One-Eyed King Black Reaper, as defined by my anime list. Quite a few titles he has there. I might as well just compare this to the Japanese voice actor, and I don't mean it in disrespect. I thought that this voice was slightly less subtle than Kaneki that I usually know or listen to. I feel like Kaneki as a ghoul anyway, I took a clip from Tokyo Ghoul Re. I feel like Kaneki usually, or at least Heisei Sasaki or anything, has a bit more of a subtle tone, which is usually kind of scary because he, at least, okay, if we go right forward to say Reaper Kaneki, He has a subtlety to his voice that doesn't require shouting. He has the authority, he has the credentials, which makes him menacing in himself, almost like how a whisper is more scary than a shout. I didn't get that too much from this voice, not to the extent where it was bad, no. I don't really criticize voices anyway, but this time I thought it just wasn't as subtle, or not to the subtlety that I expected. With that being said, I think the voice is a pretty fine voice. It's consistent, and it still matches Kaneki overall. I feel like it matches the theme or notion that Kaneki is just a normal boy, and or normal adult, I guess. And it matches that just fine. And the final one, this is a very, very big throwback. Maruko. Maruko bots from Attack on Titan. I swear, they hate Maruko so much. Maruko just either keeps finding me, or they just hate Maruko so much. And I think it's that they hate Maruko. Although Maruko does find me quite a lot, so I did like this voice, but the only sad thing about when you want to hear Maruko's voice is that, and I'm not really willing to spoil Attack on Titan for this, but the representation you get in regards to his voice isn't completely accurate, because it's usually him being very fearful and trembling within his voice, just like, I wish the military told them. Bad voice acting, that's why I'm not a VA. But I hopefully you get what I'm saying. Maruko just is always so sad when you listen to his voice and look at those scenes, because they always pick out that scene to clip, since it's like his only notable scene. So you got that going on. With that being said, the fear within Maruko's voice is there, and it proves the talent of the voice actor, because they're able to resemble that without making it seem that they're scared for no reason. They're actually scared for a purpose. You can hear the sort of trembling within their voice. And just to wrap up today's segment, if all these characters were to meet, these characters are all very different, actually. Almost three different ends of the spectrum. I feel like Kaneki is kind of savage, but has a degree of morality within him. But still, in the most part, very savage. Route A is proof of that. Absolute savage. Karma, I think, is probably the most sane of the three, the most rational. Really smart as well, but also versus these two, the most normal guy you'll meet. And then Maruko, I've always found Maruko, now I'm kind of jumping on the Maruko hate train, but I feel like Maruko's always kind of been a bit plain, and we only get emotion out of him when he's trembling in fear, as we get from those clips. So I felt like Maruko would just not talk, or he would just be very civil in the discussion. But then again, Karma would probably jump out and exploit that weakness when Maruko just stays quiet and observes the chat between him and Kaneki. It also depends on which Kaneki you're talking about. If it's Reaper Kaneki, probably one word replies. Haisu Sasaki, good conversation. Regular Kaneki, good conversation. Dragon, who knows? Kaneki is just multifaceted, too many dimensions to him. That is where I think the problem lies, Tokyo Ghoul Re and Tokyo Ghoul as a whole. Anyway, that has been my impromptu Link the VA segment for this week. Back to the show. So, lessons from this year. I have a few more and then we can wrap up today's episode. This one, I think, is a bit more conceptually profound, or at least has a bit more depth to it than the others. It's a bit less of my viewing habits and more of something that I've realized in terms of concepts and processes within anime. And that's this idea that I spoke a bit about, quite a lot about in the promo episode, and that's on like logic and sticking to the formula. Nothing or not everything needs to be ingrained within deeply rooted logic and concepts. And with that brings this idea of contradiction, how beautiful I think contradiction is within anime. That kind of sounds postmodern, and maybe it is a bit. This idea that things don't need to align and always be rigid is kind of ironic, because on the podcast I speak a lot about structure and what structure does for it, but it's almost a structural technique in itself not to abide to the structure. We take Nakashima and Imaishi creating Promare, which is very fluid, but I've watched quite a few shows as well this year that aren't very fluid as well, so I've taken a plunge into short film, anime short films more specifically, so the likes of Kubo Yutaro, Chinese studios such as Studio Tumble, I've watched quite a bit of their work, and I've really enjoyed it because it's not really tied to anything. It's not tied to arcs, it's not really tied to time. Your short film can be, and I take this from my film club teacher back in year 5 or primary school, your short film can be anything from about 10 seconds to, he said, 40 minutes, and I kind of stand by that still. Film, and not only just film, but form doesn't need to be a shackle for creativity, as I've learned. I've discovered probably one of my favorite short films this year, Crazy For It by Kubo Yutaro. Form from the visual point of view, as well as the time point of view, go out of the window because they're not needed to make a piece that is impactful, a piece that's impacted me and my view of anime for a really long time now, or at least for this year, has impacted how I feel about the medium as a whole, and that's one of the anime that I think has stimulated this point for me. Additionally, the reinforcements have been stuff like Neon Genesis Evangelion, although I watched that before, I'm rewatching now, so I think I kind of understand it a bit more, and those contradictions. So we take Shinji's personality and how that toggles between sort of happy and enjoying yourself to isolated and negative. Toggling between the two is a contradiction that makes the series what it is. It makes the series what it is because we're not really sure as to where he will turn next and how that influences everybody else within the team. It can influence them negatively, contradiction can impact positively. It's that insecurity that we get from the show which brings it out, and that's one of the main reasons, although I don't usually say it, is probably the main reason why I like the show, because it's almost confused. And I think I'm not tired, but I'm willing to see more narratives just not always stick to the formula and go out there and produce something that is free from the shackles of conventions and industry set standards or narrative standards, and make something for the sake of it being free. I would love to see more short films, although I doubt this would happen because that wouldn't really be economically viable, but I would love to see more short form content from the likes of the bigger studios. Again, I very much doubt that will happen, but I'd really love to see something like that. More content like Promare, something that doesn't really stick to narrative and is fine with making loads of jokes and sticking to what it loves. So in summary, just more narratives that don't take themselves as seriously, that's something I'd love to see next year. The counter argument obviously would be this thing that I'm really stuck up on about strong concepts in anime, and I've planned to do an episode on this, on how sort of concepts are really strong for shows. So Decade Review, I spoke about hedonism and epicureanism slightly within Kuzuno Honkai, and I think that's powerful because it influences the entire course of the narrative, gives us a sort of idea as to character motives, but when it subverts those, that even makes them stronger. But what if I was to say that we don't always need that? So Promare, Kill la Kill, Fully Cooly have all proven to me that you can make a great and recognizable piece by simply not doing such. Being unique is just as good as being good these days, I think, kind of. Being unique isn't everything within the anime game from what I've seen, but it's quite a big deal. Some of the anime which I've been referring to, so the likes of Kubo Yutaro and Studio Tumble over in China, maybe aren't recognized as much. However, I do think this links to my sort of final point, and we're moving into the future of anime, and a time where things aren't always going to go to plan in terms of narrative and all. That sounds a bit weird, as if all the creators within the anime game are going to stop making linear narratives. No, that's not going to happen, but I do see a move towards more flexible shows, and I would love to see more of that in the creative space. So I name dropped them twice now, so I might as well quickly go into it. I've been watching a lot of other things. So I've been scouting Bilibili, looking at university graduation films and projects, and sort of other smaller projects. Two of them being Alita's Trial and Alita's Bedroom Story, both of them on Bilibili. Bilibili being Bilibili, I'm just going to say it in my regular British accent. Bilibili is effectively a YouTube, kind of. Maybe not as big, but loads of content to dig your teeth into from the East. And I found some of these movies, it took me a while to dig them up, however, they were worth it. They kind of opened my eyes to how the future of anime is changing, or at least the future of anime is really bright, because we're not just seeing things that are dominated just by Japan, and that's not a bad thing per se. But the landscape isn't going in a way that's just the same as before, and we are definitely going to see more variety within the anime game, hopefully in the next decade. I think the title for that sort of point would be, the game is only beginning. We're only at the first half, or not even half, we've barely started our long journey, or at least I've barely started my quest in anime. I don't think anime is stopping anywhere in producing high quality stuff. And I've kind of just thought one point, this final one, before we just go to the indie moment segment and then some closing thoughts. It's just have fun with anime. That goes for me, and it can go for you, I'm not too sure, but have fun with it. This is a medium to be enjoyed. This is a medium made to be enjoyed. Sometimes an escape, sometimes a commentary, sometimes a piece that can change your life, sometimes a piece that just makes you laugh for when you're on the train at work and you remember something in your head. It can be any of that, and that is basically it in regards to my point. But as I've said, anime is a beautiful thing. I have in my description, it's a wonderful but complex thing, and I will probably stand by that forever. And while we're trying to suss out all of it, let's just remember that this goes for me mostly, but let's just remember to enjoy it while we can with everything that's to come and everything which we have right now, because this is a medium made for us to enjoy. We have creators who are going out of their way to make some beautiful work, whether that's students just out of university, whether that's 70-year-old veterans to the industry voice acting, whether that's aspiring artists, whether that's producers, whether that's software creators and game creators. They're all trying to make this industry one that we can enjoy as consumers. So let's do them a favor and try our best to enjoy it. But at least I'll try my best to enjoy it. That's my soapbox over. I honestly don't like soapboxing. This has been a bit of a soapboxy episode though. But anyway, here's the In The Moment segment for this week, talking about what I have been reading and watching. This week, slow but fast. That makes no sense, but slow but fast. I've been able to watch quite a few short films this week, but in terms of anime content, I'm slightly behind. So weekly harems, I'm usually always up to date. Vow Love, Bakuben. I can't sacrifice harems in the weekend. But in regards to longer content, I've kind of put that a bit on the back burner for now, because life, producing the podcast, that sort of stuff. Although I will be getting those arc analyses done. I also have a bit of a story though, a tiny story. I've been messed up for life by this anime that I thought was going to be a bit more of a tease than what I thought it was. And this is an anime called Code Ishogoto, or Working With Voice. I'm sorry, I can't say that, but Working With Voice, the animation. It's based off a manga, and what can I say? This anime isn't very popular, I think. Maybe for a good reason. Maybe. This has left me messed up. Because let's say it's... I want to call it an indirect hentai. Indirect. And let me explain why. Because the basis of the plot is that the sister of someone who works for an eroge, or let's say H Games company, hires, more like forces, their sister to voice act for the games. So just to wrap that up, sister hires sister to voice act dirty stuff in H Games. I thought that this was going to be kind of funny, because it was. Okay, it was kind of funny. However, the main drawback of this anime is that it's a bit visual. And things materialize, or at least are envisioned. So the scenes that are being voice acted are brought to life. kind of, and censorship is there, and for once, I actually appreciate it. But I didn't expect that. I thought it was just going to be, you know, moaning noises, and then it would just, that's it, that's the joke, and the person's embarrassed, and coo coo coo, that's it. They went the extra mile which I did not want. So I got a bit more than what I bargained for this time. Did I have some fun? Kind of. It was two episodes. I was planning this episode at the same time. I just had it on the background, but on an extra small screen. So I was doing that at the same time. It was very distracting though, because every time I'd hear a bit of a moaning voice and thinking that they're just at the microphone saying it, I'd look up and then I'm seeing a genuine scene. So that was an experience for today. Also this week, I spoke a lot about short films, so I'm not going to speak about that too much today. I might as well talk about something I did. This wasn't this week. This was a few weeks ago, but I don't think I'll end up really speaking about it on the podcast anytime soon. And this is a lot more grounded content, so no borderline hens of ties. This time, I watched Zone of Ender, and this is an anime or a narrative produced by Hideo Kojima. If you don't know, Hideo Kojima has recently come out with his latest game, Death Stranding. Kind of like a dementia anime, but it's a game. You don't really know what's going on until you complete it. Loads of box carrying. I haven't played it. I want to watch all the cutscenes and maybe even do a show on Zone of Ender. I'm not too sure about that though. Zone of Ender is just what I expected from Hideo Kojima. Hideo Kojima being someone who's been inspired by the likes of Hideaki Anno, one of the creators and scriptwriter behind Neon Genesis Evangelion. I can see that exactly through Zone of Ender. Zone of Ender sees the slow corruption of a character. I watched the prelude, not the full series, because I don't have time at the moment. But it sees the slow corruption of this character through a mecha. It sounds familiar. It doesn't go down the same way as Evangelion at all, but I can see the inspiration and I can tell that this is someone that would make something like Death Stranding. Ambiguous, relatively quote-unquote artsy or quote-unquote edgy, I hate that word. That sort of thing, it came through quite prominently. Did I enjoy Zone of Ender? Yes and no. I think I need to explore it a bit more. It's about less than an hour. I think it was about 45 minutes. And I did enjoy the whole underlying theme of the slow corruption, but it felt a bit confusing. It was a bunch of characters at the same time that I didn't really understand, didn't have much of a connection to, so I didn't really know how to feel about all of them. I've forgotten all the characters' names, to be honest. I can just remember the face of about two of them that really mattered. So, I'm willing to explore this a bit more with the 24 episodes version. I think it's about 24, if not 25, something like that. Willing to explore that and gain a greater understanding as to who Hideo Kojima is as a creator and someone who produces narrative. I think that will be it for the In The Moment segment for this week. And with that, if you have enjoyed the show, 5-star review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, it would be really appreciated, as I'm putting out these episodes constantly. It would be nice to know how I'm doing and how you're enjoying it, maybe not enjoying it, so I can make a better show each week. Anyway, here's the closing thoughts for this week, so let's end the In The Moment segment. So what have I learned from anime this decade, anime in 2019, and just watching anime as a whole? Spontaneity is an important thing. That's probably the core of my message. Spontaneity can be very good for discovery and finding new things. Spontaneity within narrative can be really good for just standing out. And standing out, I think, can be a really good thing to do. Is it always a good thing? No. However, we've learned lessons from that, or at least I think anime has learned lessons from that. And then the other thing that I think encapsulates all of it, it's just having fun. I've learned to just be a bit more loose with what I do in regards to watching anime and enjoying it, being less hung up on, oh my gosh, I need to watch good anime, and I must watch the best shows that will make me the better person I am, and just do what you want and have a good time with it, because that is all that really matters. No one's regulating your anime taste. And although I do analysis on the show, I do it because I'm having fun with anime, and I'm doing it to have fun with anime because I find that engagement interesting and fun and informative. I try to bring value by finding or presenting what I found valuable within an anime. Maybe that doesn't work for everyone, and that's fine. But that's kind of what I try to do in this podcast. And I think part of the value of today's episode, hopefully, is that I'm bringing forward what I found valuable from my experiences with anime to you. And maybe you can relate, maybe you don't. Feel free to tell me. So just have fun with it. So just to wrap up, anime is only getting better, I think. I think anime is in a good place. I don't think anime is going off the rails. Definitely more snappy and watch and forget sort of thing. We can prove that quite through the 2010s. However, I do think that it's in a good direction, and new things are emerging from the shadows. New creators will be coming through the 2020s, and so be prepared, as the 2020s are going to be wild. Thank you for listening to this episode of Get in the Mecha. That has been episode 23. I really wanted this episode to be a bit more personal before we get back to arc analyses. You know, it's December, it's around Christmas, so I want to feel a bit more connected with you guys as it's the holiday season. So why not just take a bit of a step back and look just at what I've learned and what I've been looking at overall throughout anime and my watching experience. I wouldn't personally call myself a veteran to anime as of yet. I wouldn't really say I'm as seasoned as most people, but again, I don't feel like that's the purpose of this podcast. I'm not really trying to put myself forward as the guy that knows it all. Through that, I'm trying to make sense of anime, because it makes a lot of sense, but it makes no sense all at the same time. So enough with the weird postmodern talk of contradiction and everything else. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Hopefully you enjoyed a bit more of a personal aspect. I'd love to do a few more episodes like this, but we will obviously be getting back to analysis. Next episode, I believe we're looking at the Battle of the Trost District arc. The return of Attack on Titan on the podcast. Yes, the Battle of the Trost District arc is next week. We'll be discussing all of that, thematics, plot summary. So this is our second to last episode of the year, so have a happy new year. I'll probably grant you a happy new year again next week, but have a good day, week, month, and 2019, and I'll see you in the next one. This has been Get in the Mecha. The music in this production goes as follows: Go Lucky by Chasers Gaming, Difference by Chasers Gaming, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, 8-bit Title Screen by Joth, and Anomaly by Eric Medeas under soundimage.org.